If it's Thursday, 6 p.m., that means it's time for Perspectives by John Pierce. Good evening and welcome to Perspectives with John Pierce here on WDIY 88.1 FM. Good to have you aboard this evening. Our topic is Villages in Partnership. It's an organization that does great work in Malawi, Africa. My two guests are Rich Dazener, who is Director of Strategic Partnerships USA, and Eileen Gradwell, Director of Operations USA. All right, what did I just say there? Let's talk about the organization first before we talk about Malawi itself. When we were off the air, I asked if you could explain the difference to me between Director of Operations, that's Eileen, and Director of Strategic Partnerships, and that's Rich. So who wants to tackle that one?
I can.
Eileen.
Yeah, so I'm the Director of Operations in the United States. We have a small office here with just six staff members. And my role is really the administration of the office, helping with human resources, administration of the office, setting the budget, making sure that we're following the budget, helping to document processes and procedures. And then Rich, as Director of Strategic Partnerships, is really responsible for building and maintaining all of the partners that we have around the world. A lot of them here in the U.S. are church partners, our individual partners, business partners. So building those relationships, because it's through those partnerships that we're really able to support the work of VIP.
All right. So, Eileen, does that mean that mostly you're in the office here, wherever that office is?
The office is located in Allentown, New Jersey.
There's an Allentown, New Jersey.
Is.
How dare they?
Yeah.
I wonder which one came first.
I don't know.
Ooh, I have to ask that question. James, do you have any idea? No. James, do you have any idea where Allentown, New Jersey is? No. All right. We're going to have to look that one up.
Pretty comfortable. It's New Jersey.
You're in Allentown, New Jersey.
Yes.
Okay. And Rich, are you just flying all over the place?
A little bit, John. Yeah. So the headquarters is in Allentown, New Jersey. That's my day-to-day. But as the Director of Strategic Partnerships, you're out meeting with partners. So today we're in the Lehigh Valley meeting with a couple of church partners and obviously speaking with you. But the rest of the time, it's working the phones to meet with people and set up appointments and then also being out. So I might be in Chicago. I might be in Texas. I might be in Virginia. But we do a lot of work there in New Jersey as well.
Okay.
It's a home base.
You're looking at a lot of airports, airlines, huh?
Absolutely.
Yes. So this is called Villages in Partnership. And one thing that I caught my attention was something that they call our approach. Listen first, act together. What a great slogan. When invited into a new village, now we're talking Africa, right?
That's correct.
We're talking only Malawi. Okay.
Correct.
Let me stop right there and ask why. Why Malawi particularly?
It's a great question, John. First, Malawi is the poorest peaceful country in the world, according to The Economist magazine. And from there, we deal with extreme poverty in rural villages. And our goal is to eradicate that extreme poverty through working with individual villages by providing six critical needs of human development, providing water, food security, education, healthcare, economic development, and infrastructure. Poverty is very complicated. It takes more than money. It takes an integration of all those aspects. But we can't just go in there and tell them what they need. We need to hear from them what they need and then work with them to provide those solutions. Give them the tools to help themselves.
And you say Malawi is the
poorest peaceful country in the world.
Interesting. And Malawi, it's in Southeast Africa. How do you pronounce the name of the capital?
Lilongwe.
Lilongwe. The language is English, but there must be various languages that the folks speak when they're at home.
Actually, the language is Chichewa. Everyone learns English, but of course in the rural villages, they're still speaking Chichewa.
Okay. The way we think a lot of times is it a French-speaking former colony or is it an English-speaking? This would be an English-speaking.
Correct.
Okay. Population about 21 million. And they have a national animal. You know what it is?
I do not.
I do not.
I've never heard of this guy. Thompson's gazelle.
Hmm.
Whoa.
We don't see any of those where we are.
No. All right. And then this was a surprise to me, too, for an African country, 87% Christian and 11% Muslim.
That's correct.
Sound right?
Villages and Partnership, though we are a faith-based organization, we really don't discern that in the villages. So we could have a Muslim village that we're working with. We could have a Christian village that we're working with.
Right. And the only way you would know the difference is possibly the way they dress?
Correct.
Do they have churches and mosques?
Correct. They have both there. Yeah.
They have both of there. So first of all, you listen when you go to a new village. Oh, by the way, how many villages are we talking about that Villages and Partnership deals with?
So our current, what we call catchment area, the area that we work in, is 29 villages and about 25,000 people. But this year, we're in the middle of a new vision, and our vision is to expand by 50%, which is 15 new villages. And we have identified those villages, and we are currently bringing on 7 new villages in 26, and we'll be bringing on 8 more villages in 27.
Whoa, that's ambitious. And so the population of each village is something under 1,000 people.
Well, each village is different. Everything there is, some villages are large in landmass. Yeah. And small in people and vice versa, and then Okay. Everywhere in between. So it's each village has its own challenges and its own population. So as we go into each village, we really tailor our approach to what they need and what their specific needs and demographics and different things.
That's
are.
That's a challenge right there.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a mountainous country? A lot of bicycling or no?
Where we are, most of the travel's by foot. It's extreme poverty. But bicycles are a mode of transportation that they like to use, but also motorbikes too. So it's as a family might become more prosperous, that's when they might buy a bicycle or buy a motorbike. Okay. But you don't see many cars out in the rural villages.
Right. Or roads that would accommodate cars.
No, no paved roads out there. I mean, they're wide enough. We take a Land Cruiser around when we need to go from village to village. But in our staff in Malawi, a very dedicated and accomplished group of people, they often will use motorbikes to get around. Petrol is very expensive there. Sometimes it's shortages. So instead of taking a big Land Cruiser, they might just take a motorcycle to do some of the work they need to do.
Uh-huh. And how many folks do you have working with Villages and Partnership on site in Malawi?
Yeah, we have 22 staff in Malawi that's full-time. And as Rich said, they are dedicated, very professional, trained in specific areas that we're working in, whether it's agriculture or education or health. And then we have part-time staff that's working directly in communities. And then every village that we work with also has volunteers that are part of a village implementation committee. So they're helping to prioritize and identify what the needs are in those particular villages.
Are these folks we're talking about, 22 people, are they Malawians?
They are all Malawians.
And so, I skipped right by this. I didn't notice really when it says, when invited into a new village. Mm-hmm. So who typically would invite your organization, the Villages and Partnership, into a village?
So they're in both a governmental and tribal governance.
Okay.
So when VIP comes in, Villages and Partnership comes in, we work with both the government and the TA, which is traditional authority, and that's the tribal, the chiefdom. So our staff goes in and navigates both of those bodies to discuss what's best, but the invitation will come from the chief of the village.
The chief of the village. Mm-hmm. So that's tribal.
Correct.
Our approach starts with asking community leaders to identify their top priorities. Next, we mobilize global support to provide resources and expertise. The entire village works with us to build solutions, and once a project is completed, villagers take ownership of it. Give me a few examples of what these projects are.
We'll take a very simple one.
Why are you smiling at each other so much here, Eileen?
I'm giving him the cue. He can answer that question.
And also, there's so many projects, John, that we're doing at Villages in Partnership. We could probably fill up a couple of hours if you had the time.
James, but, do we have that time? James is vigorously shaking his head. Okay. Sorry about that, Rich.
So I'll use a very simple example. When we go into a village, almost always the first thing they ask for is access to clean water. So they want a well. So when we come into a village and we're going to put in a well, we work with the village implementation committee, and they identify who's going to be working with Villages in Partnership, but who's also going to be working in the community to collect the fees for the water, who's going to be in charge of doing small maintenance, and who's going to be in charge of working with our area mechanics who we've trained as Villages in Partnership to add to the economic development of the region. But then that village implementation council, once the well is drilled and functional, they take over the maintenance, the collection of the fees, and now it's theirs.
All right. And they've never had committees working like this before for a well, right? This is totally new.
Correct. And most of the time they haven't had a well, but if they had, some NGOs come in, they put a well in, and then they leave. VIP is been there for 15 years now 16 years, but our intention is to stay long term and build relationship over time. We have a great relationship and reputation in the area. So this kind of sustainability is what we're striving for, but we can't have it be sustainable if the people on the ground aren't invested in it. So it's up to them to be taking on these roles and responsibilities to maintain the
world. So you all have to be constantly in touch from the U.S. with the folks, the 22 people who are on the ground there working their committees?
I would say
in order to stay in touch.
I would say that it's deeper than that, John. It's not like, hey, we're like a watchdog or anything like that. I mean, these people are dedicated and know what their jobs are and are very interested in making sure these projects are successful. We have an international board because we are an NGO, a non-governmental organization, and that international board is made up of Malawians and Americans, and then we have a U.S. board here, which is made up of all Americans.
Right. Well, my guests this evening on Perspectives are talking to us about Villages in Partnership. Rich Daisner, who is Director of Strategic Partnerships USA, and Eileen Gradwell, Director of Operations USA. This is terrific work that you're doing abroad, and we must take a break now. When we come back, we will explore further how things are going over in Malawi, so very far away from our listening audience. I'm John Pierce. Our engineer this evening, James Zibrot, and we'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY 88.1 offers many choices and real voices. Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all here on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR News headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. on 88.1 WDIY and streaming at WDIY.org.
And we're back talking about Malawi and poverty there. And my two guests, Rich Daisner and Eileen Gradwell, officers in this Villages in Partnership, it's called. And it's started 16 years ago, Villages in Partnership.
That's correct.
How did it start exactly?
Our founder and current executive director, Liz Heinzel-Nelson, really felt a calling to understand poverty more and to understand the needs and how we could be helping that. And so her husband, who is minister of Allentown Presbyterian Church in Allentown, New Jersey, took a sabbatical from the church, and they went over and lived in Malawi with their young family for a year. And as while Stephen was teaching and preaching, Liz was out really understanding and exploring. She stayed in the villages, she met people, she talked to different organizations that were doing work, and came back, and out of that was this vision to continue to build these partnerships and these relationships with people here in the U.S., with people in Malawi.
Oh, and that was 16 years ago and still thriving. Villages in Partnership. This collaborative effort helps secure the critical resources of clean water. Now, that's what you mentioned before, Rich, was the first thing that the villagers will say is, we need water. Basically, we need a well.
Correct.
Okay. Food security, education, health care, infrastructure, and economic opportunity. That's a lot to chew there and try to address. Only by addressing all of these needs simultaneously can people break free from poverty's grasp. What a statement. A chilling statement. Poverty's grasp. So give us a little sense of going into one of these villages in Malawi, and what would we see, and who's in charge? Are there schools? What's going on?
So these are very rural villages, and extreme poverty is not a poverty that we would see here in the United States. This is, we actually subscribe to an author, Hans Rosling. He has a book, Factfulness, that really describes these kind of four levels of living. And if you can consider the United States at level four, this is level one. This is extreme poverty. And VIP's goal isn't to get people from level one to how we're living here in the United States. It's really to move people to something that's a little bit more sustainable so that they could, you know, they could survive through a drought. If they lose someone in the family, you know, someone that's earning them income, they can still know how to survive. And so we're trying to move them from level one to level two, from scarcity to something that's more sustainable.
Eileen, give us the name of the author and the book again.
Hans Rosling, Factfulness is the name of the book.
Factfulness. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And so that level one, what it looks like is thatched roofs, no electricity, no running water, dirt floors. They may be sleeping on the dirt floor or maybe on a straw mat. They have maybe one meal a day and usually just of one type of food. And the main source of food is corn or maize, as it's called there. And they make a corn dough called nasima, and that would be the primary meal. They would be cooking over open fires, and they often suffer what they call a hungry season.
When they cook, is that indoors or outdoors?
It's often indoors because during the rainy season, they would be lighting those fires indoors. And their homes are just two rooms where they're sleeping, eating, and cooking in one room. And if they have animals or crops, that would be stored in the other room.
Oh, how many animals and which animals would they have?
Many times they might have chickens or goats. It all depends. VIP has a livestock distribution program as part of the food security piece. And depending on the need of the family and how secure or scarce their situation is, our staff identifies them. And so they might be given a goat. And then once they have a goat, and if it breeds and they have more goats, their first offspring has to go to the next family in need. It's called the pass-along program.
Oh.
So we use that for all the different livestock we distribute. But when you're barely feeding yourself, you're probably not ready to receive a cow or a pig. So a goat that can forage for itself is usually a good way to get started.
And also to provide milk?
They are not milk goats. That type of goat there doesn't provide milk. It's really for offspring to sell, and then and possibly for protein.
And how large are the families? How many children in a family typically? Or is there a typical?
There's probably not a typical, but I would say if a family is probably a household is six, maybe six people.
Right.
And a couple things about Malawi that you didn't mention in your stats was that the population is mostly subsistence farmers. So people say, well, why isn't the government helping? Well, the tax base is so small. I mean, you have 90, 95% people living off the land. You know, if you your job is to farm and grow food for your family. So there's not a lot of taxable revenue like we have here in the United States. So that therein lies part of the problem why there's not services and so on and so forth in these rural villages. And also most of the population is under 18 too. So you have a lot of children, a lot of single parent households, and a lot of orphans in Malawi.
Oh, wow. Why do we have a lot of orphans?
A combination of things, but Eileen can jump in because she's been over to Malawi for a medical trips many times. But the AIDS epidemic that had happened and still prevalent, and then also hunger and other diseases that we take for granted here that kills mothers and fathers.
Malaria is a big. And, you know, we eradicated malaria years ago here, but they are still struggling with malaria.
Malaria. Let's go to education. Are we going to see a schoolhouse if we go into a village?
You may see villages and partnership helps to support education from preschool all the way through college. And it could be training preschool teachers, establishing buildings for preschools to be held in. Building primary schools or school classroom buildings. And then recently we built a secondary school. So it was an ask from the community because, again, we're always listening and responding to the community. And so we built a secondary school that is now listed as number one in the region, competing with all kinds of urban and other schools within the nation.
How do they compete?
As far as
test scores
and the number of children that are moving on to college and getting accepted into college.
Are there any sports among the schools, where this one school playing against another one the way we do here?
There's not a lot of it, but they do love to play football or soccer as we would know it here. Okay. And netball, basketball.
Okay.
They call it netball.
They call it netball.
Yes.
Yeah. They can play it like recess. There's some room at the school for them to do that.
So the two sports you would say are soccer and basketball.
Yes.
We're talking about education and schools. Where would the teachers get their training?
At university. So all of the teachers would be university trained. Except for preschool teachers, they're locally trained, and we have a person working for VIP that is an education officer, and he trains those preschool teachers along in partnership with the government. As Rich described, VIP doesn't do anything without being in alignment with both the government officials as well as the local tribal officials.
Right. And so you mentioned university. Is there one university, and that's in the capital city?
There's many universities in Malawi, University of Malawi, but I could name a few of them, but there's options for students to go on after what they call Form 4, which is like a senior in high school.
Okay.
But the education system's different in Malawi in the sense that at eighth grade, you know, to put it in U.S. parlance, you have to pass a test and you have one chance, and if you pass it, then you get to move on to secondary school.
And if you don't pass it? That's the end of your education?
It could be, yeah. Paid for by the government and supplied that way, yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Any ambition on the part of young folks to go and study abroad? Or do they stay in Malawi?
I think if they had the opportunity and the means, they would love to go abroad to study. As a matter of fact, one of our beneficiaries, a man named Sidney, received a scholarship, did well in school, moved on, and got his degree in Malawi, and then subsequently got accepted to a program at Wheaton University outside of Chicago. And he got his master's there and just graduated in May.
Oh.
And he returned to Malawi to work with his brothers and sisters there, so to really give back to the community again.
So he's a social worker, you would say?
He got his degree in disaster management, so he's back in Malawi again.
Good story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great story.
Do you work with other NGOs while you're doing your work in Malawi, or are you working only with the government and the tribal leaders?
So where we are, the government doesn't want too much overlap of NGOs. They don't want NGOs stacking up in one place and maybe not having any coverage in another place. So that's why it's really important for us to work with the government so they can kind of allocate these NGO-type resources around the country as best as possible.
Right. Well, I want to let our listeners know how they might join your effort in Villages in Partnership. If they wish to do so, how would they get in touch with you all?
Well, they can certainly reach out to us on the web. We have villagesinpartnership.org. And there's ways to sign up for a newsletter that will keep you informed about all of the activities and the stories that are from Malawi. One of the best ways to know and understand Villages in Partnership is to go there. And so we hold friendship trips every year. One of them is medically based, but the others are not. And so you can go over and experience and build relationships and see the work for yourself. And to meet the people. They're really tremendous, hopeful people. And it's just a tremendous, life-changing experience to visit there yourself.
So that's villagesinpartnership.org.
Correct.
Correct. And I would recommend, in addition to going to the website, there's videos there. Really explore the website because it can give you a real flavor for what the organization's about. It's not just what we do, who we are, but there's also links to different videos so you can hear from the people in Malawi about how these programs are helping them and what it's done in their lives, as well as people in the United States have gone over and how it's affected them and how it's affected their lives when they came back.
Do we hear some singing and see some dancing on the videos?
Of course.
Absolutely. They're very warm and happy people. Yeah. And John, when we come to a village and they know we're coming, not everybody has clocks and watches and things. So as you drive up, you see the crowd starts to build and there's drummers and there's dancers. And then you might show up at 2 o'clock and there might be 20 people there. But by 3 o'clock, there's hundreds of people there.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's very exciting. They're very excited that people care about them.
Yes.
And it provides them with hope. So that's why the friendship trips are so important.
Yes, hope is so important. Well, we've come to the end of our perspectives for this April, and I want to thank my guests, Eileen Gradwell, Director of Operations USA, and Rich Daisner, Director of Strategic Partnerships USA, for Villages in Partnership. Congratulations to you for the 16 years and for the wonderful work that you're doing to fight poverty in Africa. Dear listeners, thanks for tuning in. Thank you to James Zibrot, our excellent engineer. Until we meet again, remember to be gentle with your neighbor.